Good afternoon, Juno. Welcome to our weekly show produced by the Black Awareness Association of Juno, also known as Juno BAA. I'm Christina Michelle Patterson, confidence coach, hypnotherapist, and member of Juno BAA. I'll be co-hosting today's show with Sarita Knoll, a fellow member of our community and of the BAA. And today we are discussing the history and importance of African-American authors and literature, especially in our school system. We have the honor of interviewing an expert in this area, our guest, Nakisha Wilson, an African-American librarian joining us via Zoom from Miami, Florida. Sarita, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, and then we will hear from our guest, Ms. Nakisha Wilson.
Hi, my name is Sarita Knoll. I have a master's in English, and I am an accountant, so don't judge me too harshly for that. I also am a former educator, and so I'm really, really excited to connect with Nakisha Wilson to find out how we can strengthen our own community when it comes to incorporating Black literature and the Black experience into our education system here in town. Nakisha, will you introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you for having me today. I'm Nakisha Wilson, and I am a librarian. I've been doing this work now for about 7 years. Before I became a librarian, I was an educator working with primary age children. But a lot of the work that I do involves promoting children's literature, specifically Black children's literature. I do that with my work as a librarian during the day, but I also have the privilege of working as the chief maker and education director for a book subscription box called Just Like Me that sends out books to children ages 0 to 12 that are written by Black authors, and it's really exciting work, and I'm happy to be here with you all.
Okay, so we will make sure that we post that information. I believe you shared that with us. We'll post that information on our Juno BAA Facebook page so that community can access that information. Backing up a little bit, you know, just trying to find out a little bit about you, what is your favorite genre of books?
I really have two favorite genres that I love. I grew up loving poems and short stories. I write poetry myself. I love poems. So I'm really into Nikki Giovanni and Maya Angelou, even some contemporary poets like Alexandra L. She's one of my favorites, Mahogany Brown. But another genre that I really enjoy reading is narrative nonfiction. And that kind of speaks to my love of stories. This is really hard to pick one.
That's fair. I can't limit myself either. What books do you enjoy reading as an adult?
So I like satire. I also like to see myself in books, so I kind of gravitate towards Black women writers, you know, because they are going to write from an experience that I can relate to. And then, of course, because of my love for just Black history, and I kind of have a nostalgic spirit to also read books that just talk about our history here in America and across the world.
Who are your favorite authors, and what aspects of their work are you most drawn to?
One of my absolute favorite authors is Bernice L. McFadden. She's pretty well known, but a lot of times when I talk to people, they don't really know her name. She's originally from Philadelphia, and she writes fiction for adults. And what I really like about her work is that she tends to pull in real events, either that are current or in history, and she incorporates it into these fiction stories. I read this book of hers once called The Book of Harlan. And the book is actually set during World War II. It's set in the States, and it also takes place overseas. And it's about jazz musician who gets like called to go to Europe to play jazz, which was a big thing, you know, during the 40s. And this man ends up in a concentration camp in Germany. When I read that book, first of all, it's a Black man that ends up in a concentration camp. That was a thing that really happened. I didn't know before reading Bernice McFadden. She tends to lead you on these journeys where you find out this information. She had also incorporated, you know, information about riots that had happened in Trenton at that time because a young Black male had been killed by a police officer. And so when I looked it up, sure enough, that was a real story. So I love reading her work. Poetry again. I love Nikki Giovanni. So You look at my bookshelf, I have several collections of poems by her. I just think that her perspective of the world is fascinating. I love listening to her talk too. And the last author that I'm really drawn to, who is sort of a new voice in the Black community, but definitely not someone that is going away anytime soon, is a young man by the name of Ta-Nehisi Coates. He wrote a book called Between the World and Me. Before that, he was a journalist. I believe he worked for the Associated Press. And he wrote a book, he published a book that was really a letter to his son, his Black son, just kind of telling him about the experiences of being Black man in America and some of the things you may encounter as a Black man here in America and around the world. And it was it's a really important read. Toni Morrison even said that before she passed, she had read that book, and she is quoted on the front as saying that this is a really important read. He's a really important voice for the Black community, and he talks a lot about our issues and the things that are really important to us and concern us. And if you, I don't know if you all have seen the newest Vanity Fair issue that's coming out in September. He actually is the special editor. So nice. If you see it on the shelf, get it. Breonna Taylor's on the cover. I got a chance to see a lot of the internal images and articles, and he did a fascinating job. I haven't been able to read it cover to cover, but he's definitely someone that I gravitate to. When I hear his name, I automatically want to know what he's doing and read his work.
So it sounds like you have a lot of variety in what you like to read. Yeah. Is it safe to guess that you're an avid reader?
I am definitely an avid
reader. Okay, so what inspired this love of books?
Yeah, you know, I was a pretty quiet and reserved kid growing up. So I was that child who liked to be in my room by myself, doing things that I could do independently. And reading was one of those things. So my mother helped to foster that. She would buy me books for Christmas because that's what I wanted. My sister and brother wanted video games and bicycles, you know, and toys, and I wanted books, which my mother loved because those were cheaper than, you know, than video games. But my mom was also a storyteller. My mother would sit me and my siblings down sometimes when we were kids, and she would just tell us these stories, you know, that she heard when she was growing up. They were always funny. Sometimes they were scary and funny. And so I just grew up really loving stories. And that just kind of influenced my thirst to want to read more. And it just, I've carried that with me my whole life. So I have my mom to really thank for that.
Was she an avid reader too?
She wasn't. Which is so funny.
That is so awesome.
So much. She was not an avid reader. My mom is a writer though. She she has been a writer. She writes plays, and so I guess they're connected in a way. So yeah, she was an avid music lover though, singer and all that stuff around the house. So it's funny that she was not an avid reader.
I think that's really amazing when parents can convey or inspire their kids to learn or love to read, you know, even if they're not engaged in that activity themselves. What do you recall reading as a child?
Oh, wow. Well, I remember most of what I read from my middle school and high school years, which would be, I think every girl was kind of reading Nancy Drew, even though I didn't know until I became a librarian that Nancy Drew was actually around when my mom was a kid. Yeah, I was reading reprints of Nancy Drew, and they're reprinting them again. So Nancy Drew has survived generations upon generations. So I read Nancy Drew, Sweet Valley Twins, you know, like those very, like, you know, suburban, everybody's doing the right thing all the time kind of life books.
I was going to say, what about the Babysitter's Club? Because you're bringing back some memories.
Yeah, I read that one too,
I didn't read them as much, interestingly enough, but that was a big thing when I was... Yeah, when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And those are other books that's another series that has just survived. And they even have made graphic novels some of the titles. Yeah, some of the titles from that time. Yeah, so they're not going anywhere. Sweet Valley Twins, I haven't seen those being reprinted, but Nancy Drew and the Babysitter's Club did.
That is, I love hearing about longevity of stories too, that I loved, you know.
Yeah.
Were you interested in any books written by Black writers in high school?
Oh my gosh, yes. The high school that I went to was in a small town that Zora Neale Hurston actually lived her the latter years of her life in. She's actually, the home that she lived in was turned into a museum not long ago. And her gravesite is in this town. And so the high school I went to named the library after her. And I was so interested in reading Zora Neale Hurston, but her books were deemed a little too edgy for a high school student, I guess. I don't think so now that I'm an adult, but I really did want to read Zora Neale Hurston. I was really curious about the work that she had done when I was in high school.
It's always interesting to see what literature and what books schools want to ban, which we'll touch on a little bit. What books or stories or authors do you wish you'd had a chance to discover and read as a child or a young person?
Yeah, you know, when I was a young person, I learned later in life that there were these fabulous Black authors that were writing work, like Virginia Hamilton, Patricia McKissick. Neither of those people are with us anymore. But they were writing children's books. When I was a young child, I don't know those names. I don't remember any stories written by those women. There are also stories that a Black male author was writing, more so when I was in junior high and high school, named Walter Dean Myers. He's an award-winning author. He passed some years ago. His son is also a writer and an illustrator. Never heard of his work when I was a young person. And I really wish that I had discovered those stories, because I think it would have added some value to, well, added value to my life, but I've also helped my self-esteem to see myself in stories. So yeah, I would have loved to have discovered those authors when I was a young person versus when I became an adult in a librarian.
Yeah. Why do you think it's so important for us to see ourselves in books, particularly? Why do you think it's important for students and children, Black children, but children in general, to see Black characters represented in books and the Black experiences represented in books?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of schools are diverse, right? And we have educators that are diverse as well. And when we work in a school with Black children, I think that it's important that they see themselves represented in the curriculum across the board, you know, not just in literature, but of course in social studies and history and science and all those things. But I think that when Black people are represented in the curriculum, when we're showing important figures and we're talking about moments in history, and we're also just promoting and telling children about realistic fiction or books that present Black people in a positive light, I think that it helps to build positive images that are important for them to see, especially if those images are relatable. I think that all of that is kind of connected to our self-worth and how we see ourselves in the context of the entire world. So I think it's really important that we as educators make sure that all of the children that we are teaching are seeing themselves in the curriculum that we're presenting to them. I think it's really important that we do that.
Right. Yeah, definitely agree with that.
What literature about the Black experience or by Black authors do you think would engage students, middle schoolers, and high schoolers?
Yeah, high schoolers seem like they're tough. They're not that tough.
They're not.
If you can find what I experienced as a kid and what I learned as an educator and a librarian is that a kid is not going to want to read a book more often when they don't see themselves in literature. I mean, if you don't see yourself, if you don't see the things you've experienced or that you can relate to in a book, why would you want to read that book? And I have seen that happen with young people. If you don't see yourselves in literature, at some point you might feel like, well, it's not for me because I don't see myself. So I think that when you're talking about high school students, there are some great authors that are doing work, that are writing fiction that includes the Black experience, realistic Black experiences. A very well-known author is Jason Alexander. He does a great job of having Black, young Black males as the main character in his books. There's also Nick Stone, who does a mixture of both. Sometimes her characters are Black males, sometimes they're girls. Renee Watson grew up, I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she actually grew up in Portland, Oregon, in a very small Black community. And so her world was kind of filled with not really seeing a lot of images of herself in literature. So she grew up making sure that she did that for young people. There are a couple of other authors. Angie Stone wrote The Hate U Give, which is a very popular book. So Tiffany D. Jackson. There are authors who are writing relatable stories about young people. And their stories are kind of like right now, things that kids can relate to right now. And I think that that's something that we can use to engage high school students, that they can see things that they can really relate to. I mean, Angie Thomas also wrote, I like music too, Angie Thomas wrote a book called On the Come Up. And it's this book about a teenager, I think she's a 16-year-old girl who wants to be a hip-hop star when she grows up. And she likes, I believe she likes Biggie. And I know in The Hate U Give, Tupac was a big figure in that book. Well, Angie Thomas grew up loving those, you know, those hip-hop artists. So I think young people can kind of relate, you know, especially if that's something that they're into. So yeah, I think you just have to find what they like and make sure that they're represented in the stories that you're sharing with them.
This is such an amazing conversation that we're having. And I think it's a good time for us to just pause for a moment for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with you. Hello, Juno, and welcome back to today's show produced by the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm Christina Michelle Patterson. I'm here with Sarita Null and Nakisha Wilson, who is our guest for today's show. And today we are talking about the history and importance of African American literature. At the beginning of the show, and just in the first segment, there were a lot of things that were discussed, and we heard from Miss Nakisha, who is an expert on this topic. And one thing that was mentioned was an author by the name of Zora Neale Hurston. And Nakisha had mentioned that she had an opportunity to attend the high school where Miss Zora Neale Hurston taught. And I just wanted to share a little bit about who Zora Neale Hurston is, if you're not familiar with her, because that's a really big deal and a really big honor. So I'll read a little bit here. Zora Neale Hurston was an American author, anthropologist, and filmmaker. She portrayed racial struggles in the early 1900s. The most popular of her four novels is Their Eyes Were Watching God, which was published in 1937. So she was here with us between the years of 1891 and 1960. And Sarita, as a lit major, Nakisha, as a librarian, how much has Zora Neale Hurston had an effect on what you've read and what you've studied?
This is Sarita. As a lit major, I didn't study her either as an undergraduate or as a graduate student. I discovered her on my own. I kind of stumbled on her. And my mind was completely blown by her and her works, but I don't actually recall her being part of the literary canon. And she's so critical and crucial to our understanding of the Black experience as far as our journey to acquiring civil rights and our journey of self-awareness as Americans, you know?
Yeah, that's shocking.
I had a similar experience. When I was in undergrad, I took a women's lit class. We had to read Toni Morrison, Edgewich Nanticott, Jamaica Kincaid, and other authors. Zora Neale Hurston was missing from that list of books, our list of women who contributed to literature. And I find it interesting that it took so long for people to kind of catch on to Zora Neale Hurston. That was something that I had heard over the years when she was a new writer, when she was actually publishing content, people often kind of dismissed her work. I think that she was ahead of her time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it took so long for a lot of people to catch up. But she's critical, you know, to the Black literary canon. I mean, she writes a lot about her life and her experiences growing up in Florida, which is where I am from. She was born in Eatonville, Florida. If you read Their Eyes Are Watching God, she's in Florida, and there's a hurricane that comes through in that book. And so, you know, someone who grew up experiencing that can totally relate to Zora Neale Hurston.
Nice. Yeah,
I love her work.
For your high school having been named after her, her books were not included. They thought her books were too edgy, which kind of takes me to the topic of banned books, and particularly banned books that were written by Black authors. Which Black authors do you think you would have benefited from reading as a young person?
Yeah, you know, one of the authors that is banned often, it's been banned for years, is Toni Morrison. The Bluest Eye often ends up on high school reading lists, mostly for juniors and seniors, those older high school students, and oftentimes it is banned, which is a shame. I know that if I would have had a chance to read The Bluest Eye, I would have been able to see a little bit of myself in that book. Piccola, who's the main character in The Bluest Eye, has a really tragic story. I mean, there's a lot of things that she has to deal with. There's sexual abuse that happens in the story, which is often why it's banned in schools. But the main part of that book is about her just wrestling with identity. You know, she wants blue eyes. That's why it was like she has this very dark skin. And I remember reading a part of the story that I loved when I first read it, was when she would see weeds, you know, growing out of the concrete, but she saw them as these beautiful flowers, or most people want to rip them out and throw them away, but she mm-hmm. saw beauty in that. And that was, I thought that was kind of like a metaphor of how we could see Piccola, who really didn't see beauty in herself, but we mm-hmm. could see her as beautiful. Wow. And I just think that that would have been important as a Black girl reading something like that, to see that there is beauty, you know, in all of us, really. And the other book that gets banned a lot, which was not out, of course, when I was in school, because it just came out like 4 years ago, but is The Hate U Give, which is by Angie Thomas. This book became a movie. Clearly, it's important. People want to read about this stuff. It's really about this girl who is struggling with making a tough choice. She finds her voice. I don't know if either of you have seen the movie or read the book, but this young woman grows up in this Black community, in some way, any town, USA, and she is in the car with her young male friend who gets killed by a police officer in front of her. And she goes kind of into hiding because, first of all, she's dealing with trauma because mm-hmm. she just witnessed this. People in her family wants her to kind of like just stay quiet because they're concerned about her safety, about speaking out against this cop who did this. But then the community is putting this pressure on her to say something. And so she ends up finding her voice. And the book is so right now. It's I mean, you think about all of the things that we're witnessing and hearing across the country when it comes to police relations and Black people. But this book has been banned over and over again. And I know that if young people are reading this book, I think that they will know that they have a voice and that they can express themselves in doing what they believe is right. And it's a shame that we ban those types of books in our schools when I think young people need them.
What do you see as a common denominator of books written by Black authors that are banned from schools?
Yeah, you know what? It's taboo topics, things that I think there are things that people aren't quite ready to face. You know, a book with, I mean, think about The Bluest Eye, had sexual abuse. A young person gets killed by a police officer in The Hate U Give. So I think the common thing is that these books are topics that sometimes adults aren't really ready mm-hmm. to talk about, or they believe that young people aren't able to handle. But it's the reality of, unfortunately, of being Black in America. These are some of the things that we might sometimes have to deal with. And those stories deserve to be talked about and heard too, but I guess we haven't arrived there yet.
I think that that's very interesting that you're saying that. And I love what you said earlier when we were talking about the books with like Nancy Drew and The Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley High Twins. You said in those books, everybody was doing the right thing all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of this view of like this unicorn and rainbows world for everybody in those books. And I know that for myself growing up here in Juneau, those were the books that I had access to. Like, I didn't know anything about Black authors or Black literature. It was very limited in our libraries. And so I couldn't just go on the internet. I think we were just starting internet. And I had to go to the library and dial up, and you had to write your name down to, you know, to try to get on the internet. And you still had the cards and the Dewey Decimal System. I don't know if they still do that. But anyway, I just, it was a lot of work to do any kind of research. And so I totally agree with you on the importance of having books that we can see ourselves in as, especially as children. Yeah, so important.
Yeah, that's good.
So on that note, and from the perspective of having been a former educator, and you've been a teacher as well, you know, especially right now during the time of COVID, right? We're not going to have access to a ton of funds right now to go get all the books that we feel that our students should be reading and incorporating. It's going to take a little bit of time, especially at least in our town, in our city, time to get those books and get the funds to get those books in our schools and to provide, you know, access to our students to those books. But we do already have a set canon, right? So then the question becomes, what questions should teachers be asking with the canons that are traditionally presented that are already firmly entrenched in our schools? What questions should be being asked so that our kids do learn to think critically and learn to start thinking about what the current canon is saying about the experiences of people who've been marginalized?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Of course, I can't group all teachers into one category because I'm sure some are doing that work or that type of work. But I do think it's safe to say that teachers could be doing a lot more cultural reflection work when they're assigning classic or traditional type literature to their students. And what I mean by that is, you know, asking students to consider the representation of cultures in the books that they're reading. Having conversation about anything that's perpetuating stereotypes, like ask them if they're noticing that type of thing in the books that they're reading. I think teachers can also foster discussions on how characters are depicted. What type of characters are missing from traditional literature? Because that's also another thing, right? If you're reading, you know, The Great Gatsby and you're reading Romeo and Juliet, and Great Expectations, where are we in these books? Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
Where are Latino people? Where are Asian people? So I think that it's an opportunity to do a lot of cultural reflection work. And then if you do have characters that come from other backgrounds, talk to them about how they're being represented. I also think it's an opportunity to do kind of like comparative work. So you can talk to young people about how characters were depicted then versus now, and think about the context of which these books were written and the time in which they were written, and you know, how does that speak to how the author writes about a character? So really it just all ties back into just doing a lot of reflection work and thinking about culture. So I think it's a really good question. Thank you. And I do think it's a great opportunity to talk to young people about culture, respecting it, recognizing it, and so on.
If you were able to, you know, create your dream.
Oh, dream.
Yeah.
Your dream.
I get to dream.
Right? Your dream classroom with a diverse set of, you know, diverse set of authors with a wide, you know, a broad range of literature in your classrooms. Let's say, and we're grouping the classrooms in, like, say, K through third, third through fifth or sixth, you know, middle school, and then the high school. What authors would you want your kids to be reading, your students to be reading, that reflect on the Black experience?
Well, automatically, I know who I would choose for the K through three range, and that's an author by the name of Carol Boston Weatherford. She has managed to write so many books highlighting moments in Black history, notable figures in Black history, that I think that if I just bought all of her books that she had published, I could cover such a wide range of the Black experience. She has books on Fannie Lou Hamer and Arturo Schomburg, Jacob Lawrence. These people are missing from the curriculum, you know, the education curriculum. So she wrote a book on the Congo Square, which is something that comes out of New Orleans, Louisiana, where enslaved Africans on Sundays in New Orleans did not work, and I say work loosely, they did not work. And so during that, on Sundays, they were actually allowed to commune with each other, and they kept a lot of their traditions that they had brought from West Africa. I didn't know that before Carol Boston Weatherford. She does a lot of important work, so I would certainly have books by her. I know that's not a very diverse list because I'm mentioning one person, but if you start with her, I think that that can just open up the door to so many other authors that are doing similar work. It gets a little harder when you get up to the middle grades in high school. I think that there's a lot more work that needs to be done, but there are a couple of books I can think of right off the top of my head. Kwame Alexander is a middle grade high school writer. He writes a lot of books where boys are the characters, Black males are the characters, and they're dealing with experiences that a lot of Black males deal with. And it really does speak to the Black experience. Not so much Black history, but he has collaborated on some books. He wrote a book called The Undefeated, which came out, I think, last year. And it's just a tribute to, it's written like a poem. And it's a beautiful tribute to all of these like Black notable people that have fought the fight. And as you just go through the pages, you just see these beautiful illustrations of all of these Black people that many of us know, Martin Luther King Jr. and the like. So he's a really good author. I would incorporate his books for middle grade readers. For high school readers, there's a book that actually came out this year. The adult version of this book is called Stamped from the Beginning. It's written by a man named Ibram Kendi. His name is Ibram X. Kendi. Okay. And the book is really talking of, it kind of gives like a history timeline of racism. He gives the history of it, and he brings us to now and how racism is still being perpetuated in our world. And he wrote a young person's version that he collaborated with Jason Alexander, who's very well known right now. He's the official young person's literature laureate of the nation. So they collaborated and they created a remixed version of the book. And I would certainly integrate that in my curriculum. It's also a great community read. If you want to get the adults and the kids together to read something together, it's a great book for just a discussion to talk about race and race issues and race relations. So those are the books and authors I would include in my dream curriculum to talk about the Black experience.
Other genres of books that you would maybe recommend, and I'm thinking of graphic novels in particular. Mm-hmm. Are there graphic novels by Black authors that you would recommend or that you think are worth our kids diving into?
Yeah, that's another area that the publishing industry has not, and I'm putting in awe, I'm giving the charge to the publishing industry. The publishing industry has not done a really good job of promoting and finding Black authors that write comic style or graphic novel books. But there are some Black characters I can think of. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. I don't know if you've ever heard of that comic, but there are probably about 5 books that were released recently. Well, Moon Girl is like this 10-year-old girl that she is a super genius, 10-year-old Black girl. She lives in Brooklyn, and somehow she opened up this portal to this prehistoric era, and this dinosaur comes in through the portal. So she's this superhero that's kind of saving the world with this dinosaur by her side, using science to save the world. I think it's a fantastic image that we're portraying of a young Black girl being this like genius in saving the world. Come on, who doesn't want to read that? Right? And, you know, most Black people have seen Black Panther, right, the movie. And the comic has been around since the 60s. It's been a Marvel, and Moon Girl is also a Marvel comic, by the way. But in the last few years, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who I mentioned earlier, was asked to write some comics for the Black Panther series, which I thought was fantastic. So historically, Black Panther was written, I believe, by a Black man. He had been writing those stories, but it was still kind of like, you know, a Marvel comic. But Ta-Nehisi Coates, another author named Roxane Gay, who writes literature for adults, she's a Black woman, Haitian American woman, they both have collaborated on Black Panther stories. Those books are more for older teens. There's not so much for middle graders, but I know how you can kind of blur the lines a bit. Mm-hmm. Shuri, who is the sister of Black Panther, has a graphic novel. There's a graphic novel by Nick Stone. It's actually not a graphic novel. It's a novel. I'm sorry. But it is connected to the Black Panther. Miles Morales, which is a Spider-Man story. There's mm-hmm. a book out about him. And then there have been some crossovers, books that have started out as novels and turned them into graphic novels. And interestingly enough, one of them is The Crossover by Kwame Alexander. And then there's another book by Jason Reynolds called Long Way Down. They're changing that one into a graphic novel. But it's a little harder for the younger readers to find graphic novels written by Black authors, unfortunately. Hopefully we'll see more in the future.
Hopefully we'll get there.
Yeah.
When I think of graphic novels, I think of them as a way to engage, I guess, reluctant readers. Mm-hmm. You know, particularly the kids who struggle to necessarily find that love of reading, and between the artwork and the story, it draws them in. What book recommendations do you have that feature Black characters that you would recommend for reluctant readers?
You know, one of my go-tos is novels and verse, novels that are written in poem format. Or actually, I shouldn't say poem like it's one. It's basically a series of poems that are collected together to make a story. And there are several of them. It's a very popular format right now in the publishing industry. Nikki Grimes, who is an author I absolutely adore. Something about Nikki's, because my nickname is Nikki. I don't know if that's why I gravitate towards Nikki, Nikki Giovanni, Nikki Grimes. But she has written several books that are novels in verse. One of my favorites is Garvey's Choice, who is just, this is about this little boy who, you know, loves music. He loves Luther Vandross, which is so interesting because he's like a child of the millennial, but that's what he loves, his music, but everyone else wants him to play like football or something. The Crossover Again by Kwame Alexander is another novel in verse. It's about these two twin boys who are excellent basketball players, and they deal with some traumatic things in the book. The Poet X by Elizabeth Acevedo is another book for YA readers. It won so many awards last year. It's an excellent book. Everybody should read it, adults included. The last book I would mention is Brown Girl Dreaming. I actually have it on my shelf. I have The Crossover on my shelf too. It was one of my favorite books when it came out. It's by Jacqueline Woodson. It's a memoir. And a lot of kids don't really think about reading memoir biographies. You know, they think of it as like schoolwork. But she was able to write this beautiful story about her childhood in this kind of like lyrical, poetic form. And I got it because it was Brown Girl Dreaming and I could relate. But I think that young people would really, really like that book. And they're fast reads, but they're engaging reads when you're talking about novels in verse. But the other things I would do would be to find out what kids like. You know, a lot of times when I would meet reluctant readers in the library, because I would be that librarian who was like looking for a kid in the stacks, and I wouldn't tell them about books to read, and they would be like, get away from me, Miss Wilson. I heard that a lot, because they didn't want me recommending books until I found out what they loved. And a lot of times kids like nonfiction topics, you know, or they would like baseball. Or I remember one time a kid was really into animals. He loved animals from the jungle, you know, so I would just find some nonfiction things. You know, if they like a little girl like Beyonce, I found a biography on Beyonce. Nice. And she read it. She said she didn't like to read, but she read that Beyonce book. So sometimes you just have to find what kids like. So I like to go the nonfiction route too, which I think most people don't think of. And the last thing is I would find books that are connected to pop culture, movies. A lot of books, children's books, are turned into movies. The Hate U Give is one of them. Nicola Yoon, who wrote two books. She has two books. I think like her first two books, and I could be wrong. Somebody can correct me on that. Her first two books were turned into movies. She just knows how to write stories that people want to turn into movies. One of them is called The Sun Is Also a Star, which is her second book. Her first one is called Everything, Everything. And they both feature young Black girls as the characters, and they were turned into books. So I was able to get kids to read Everything, Everything in my library because we were going to do a movie book comparison, and they all read it, and we watched the movie. It had popcorn. I think they came because of the popcorn, but nevertheless, they showed up, and we had a great discussion about the book and the movie and kind of compared it. So that's the route I would take with reluctant readers.
Reading books, wonderful combination. So I know that a lot of people don't think of, when they're thinking about reluctant readers or just how to have it, you know, take the time and make the time to enjoy a good book. A lot of people don't think about Audible and audio books, not necessarily Audible, but audio books. Do you have any books, favorite books that are on audio that you just love?
Yeah, well, most of them are adult books, but I have listened to some children's books too. But if you've never heard an audiobook read by Toni Morrison, do it. Toni Morrison reading her own audiobook is amazing. Just because I love her voice and it's just so interesting to hear her read her own work. So if you go on any audiobook platform, you can find her reading her own books. They have other narrators that are reading her books too. I loved listening to a book by a young author named Tiffany D. Jackson, who I met. She's wonderful, by the way. She has written three books. She has a fourth one on the way. And she wrote a book called Monday's Not Coming. And I read the book in print, and then I listened to the audiobook, and I love the audiobook as well. But it's just about this girl who's in the eighth grade. I believe she's in middle school. And her best friend has gone missing. And she's trying to find out what's happening in this story. So it's one of those stories Tiffany D. Jackson does. She keeps you on the edge of your seat the entire time you're reading her books. All three of her books I've read so far do that. I love her audiobooks. So yeah, I've listened to a lot of things. I don't listen as much as I read in print, but I would definitely start with the Toni Morrison books, Tiffany D. Jackson books. Even a Zora Neale Hurston book or two are really good on audio platform. And mysteries are good too, because sometimes the narrator can lend a voice to that.
So those are really great suggestions on books that can be listened to via Audible books. Do you have any favorite authors? I know that I enjoy listening to people like Maya Angelou and a few other, you know, people who've written the books themselves, but are there books that are narrators that you love to listen to?
Yes, there is actually a narrator that I have heard on so many books. It's a woman, a Black woman named Bonnie Turpin, and she spells Bonnie B-A-H-N-I. She has narrated so many books. In fact, I went on Audible today. I just was curious. I wanted to know how many books has Bonnie Turpin narrated. I got 299 results. Oh, and these are not just some, like, you know, books that people aren't talking about. I'm talking award-winning books like The Help, The Hate U Give, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. She read the book I was talking about, Monday's Not Coming. I mean, she has read so many books. And I started noticing her voice over and over when I would hear Audible books. But then when I would just be searching, I was thinking, wait, I've heard this voice before. I know this name. So I love what she lends to audiobooks. She's someone that if you want to just hear a good audiobook, look up Bonnie Turpin and just pick something out of the pile. It'll work.
Oh my goodness, I cannot wait to go and find a bunch of books. I'm an Audible person myself, and this is not sponsored by Audible. We are not.
No. just a default.
Absolutely. But I listen to at least 4 or 5 books a month, and I am definitely taking notes even as we're talking, and I can't wait to go add some of these books and authors to my list. Right now, we're going to go ahead and take just a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. Hello, Juno, and we are back with our topic today, the history and importance of African American literature. I'm Christina Michelle, and I'm here with Sarita Null. We are interviewing Miss Nakisha Wilson, who is a librarian and a literary expert, coming to us via Zoom in Miami, Florida. One of the authors, Nakisha, that you mentioned earlier in the segment, and her name was Nikki Giovanni. I just love how your face lit up and your voice just took on a whole different tone when you said her name, and I can tell that she is one of your absolute favorites. And I'm wondering, as we come to the end of our show today, if you wouldn't mind telling us maybe one of your favorite poems by her, and even if you could read us an excerpt of one of her poems.
Absolutely. I'm glad you recognized that. I was excited. I didn't even realize that I had lit up when I mentioned Nikki Giovanni, but I think she's a national treasure, and I absolutely love her work. So one of my favorite poems by Nikki Giovanni is called Ego Trippin'. She wrote it, I think, in the 70s. It's a poem that's been around for a while, but I can certainly read a part of it so you can maybe see why I love it so much.
That would be such a pleasure.
Okay. Ego Trippin'. I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built the Sphinx. I designed a pyramid so tough that a star that only glows every 100 years falls into the center, giving divine perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert with a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes. I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle so swift, you can't catch me. For a birthday present, when he was 3, I gave my son Hannibal an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son Noah built Noah's Ark, and I stood proudly at the helm as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intoned my loving name. All praises, all praises. I am the one who would save. I'll stop there.
Wow. Oh, beautiful. My goodness.
Isn't it beautiful?
So beautiful.
Wow. It just instills such like this feeling of pride in me about where I come from. And it's funny because in parentheses, the ego tripping is also called There May Be a Reason Why. There's a reason why there's this ego trip. So I love her work. If you get a chance, buy any book by Nikki Giovanni. I think you'll enjoy it.
I love that. What a treat. Thank you so much, Nakisha. And I love your voice. I want you to narrate one of these books. I want to hear you some more.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure having you here today, and we've had such a wonderful conversation with you. You're such a wealth of knowledge and information on this topic. I was wondering how our listeners can connect with you. I know that you had mentioned your Just Like Me book box that you are the curator for, and I actually was checking that out the other night, and I'm going to sign my niece and nephew up for that book box. So to our listeners, I definitely suggest that you take a look at that as well, Just Like Me book box. But how else can our listeners connect with you, Nakisha?
Yes, I actually can be found on Instagram at Reading in Color, and the N is just the single letter N. If you're interested in finding out about new book releases by Black authors and illustrators for children and teens, you can follow me there. I also share a lot of information and news for all ages on Facebook. I run a group that's called Black Butterfly Book Club Exclusive. It's pretty long. So if you look me up there, you can join the group and just see all kinds of information about books and authors. And I also have an adult book club that I run. Every other month we meet through the Black Butterfly Book Club Exclusive. So yeah, look me up there. And of course, if you want to find out more about the Just Like Me book box, you can go to justlikeme.com and you can sign up every month. We take new subscribers and there's a new theme every month. And I'm pretty sure that your children will enjoy it if you sign them up. It's from ages 0 to 12. So please do that. And thank you for giving me the opportunity today to talk about what I love and helping people to connect with me. Thank you.
We really appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge and your resources with us.
It was my pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And to our listeners, we will have a summary of the conversation that we had today with Miss Nikisha Wilson on Facebook under Black Awareness Association of Juno. And we will also have some resources and a list of books and authors that you can look up there in case you weren't able to catch notes or take notes during the segment today. So thank you and have a wonderful afternoon. And thank you to you ladies. Goodbye.
Thank you.